Okay, today is Wednesday, February the 6th, first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar Rishon. This is the women's Chumash class. We're up to Devarim Perakav Hei, middle passage Kiseitze.
Okay, Rabotai. We are up to, we completed last week the unit concerning Yibum and Chalitza. And today we're going to start Pasuk Yud Aleph, two Pasuk unit. Perakav Hei, Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Bet. Ki yinatsu anashim yachdav ish ve'achiv. If two people were having a brawl, two people fighting with one another, v'karva eshet ha'echad, and as always, who comes to help the husband? Who comes to bail out the husband? The wife. One of them comes forward, lehatzil et isha miyad makehu, to help her husband who is being struck by the other member of Am Yisrael. V'shalcha yada, and she literally means stretches out her hand. V'hechzika b'nehushav, and will literally strike him, or technically translates grab him, by that which would shame him. You can understand very well where she grabbed and what she grabbed, in order to somehow shame him. So what are you supposed to do? V'katzotah et kapha, translating literally, you're supposed to cut her hand off. Sorry? If this would be Islam, we would translate it literally. La lo tachos einecha. Don't have any compassion for her. Okay, that's the way the text reads. So now let me explain to you what's happening. There is a situation which the Torah describes known as chovel b'chaveiro, where somebody engages in damaging someone else. As opposed to nizkei mamon, when you damage someone's property for which you are obligated to pay for one thing and one thing only, namely the damage, despite the fact that there are other repercussions, you measure the damage and damage only, and I'll explain what I mean, repercussions. When it comes to injuring a human being, you pay for five things that might be as a result of the injury which you caused. You pay for the damages, you pay for unemployment, you pay for doctor bills, you pay for shame, and you pay for pain. Pay for pain. It's called the Chamisha Dvarim. That's what it's known as in the air pollution of the Beit Midrash. Chamisha Dvarim. The five things that you're obligated to compensate for injuring a human being. It is difficult to understand why the Torah, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu in His infinite wisdom has split up these five things throughout the entire five books of Moses and did not limit it to one single unit. He could have described all of them in one single unit, which would have been the logical thing to do. But no, I will give you chapter and verse where the Torah identifies each single episode, because it's important to see that in context. If you open up to Parshat Mishpatim, Shmot chapter 21, this should be fresh in your mind. We only read it this Shabbos. Fresh in your mind. So if you look at Shmot chapter 21, Pasuk Chav Dalet. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Ayin, famous Pasuk. Ayin tachat ayin. Shein tachat shein. Yad tachat yad, regel tachat regel. So, if you break somebody's, if you poke somebody's eye out, the Torah says, you poke his eye out. That's what it says. Somebody breaks a hand, you break his hand. Everybody knows that Torah Shiva Alpeh has interpreted this as being financial compensation. So if you want to know where does the Torah describe Nezek, Nezek is described here. You compensate for the broken hand. You compensate for the damages of a poked out eye and distorted vision. This is what's called Nezek. And then I'll give you the case to illustrate it. If you flip, if you go five psukim above that, six psukim above it, the chiyirivun anashim, and people will be quarreling, the hika ish et reyehu, the evin o be'egrov, v'lo yamut, if you strike a person and he does not die, that's in contradistinction to verse 12, pasuk yud bet. Because in Pasuk Yibet it says, Makei Ish Vamei, what is the penalty? Mot Yuman. Capital punishment for taking somebody's life. But here, he was below Yamut. V'nafal Mishkav, and he was bedridden. Im Yakum, if he should suddenly be healed. V'hitalech Bakut, he will not die from his injuries. V'hitalech Al Mishanto, v'nikah HaMakeh. Rak, Shivto yitain verapo yirape. Shivto shevet is unemployment. And verapo yirape, he must pay for all medical bills as well. So now I'll give you a simple test case to see how this works. Okay? Today, in about 45 minutes, the Mets are introducing Johan Santana. Unfortunately, the Yankees didn't get him. But the Mets are introducing Johan Santana. Okay? They are spending a pretty penny for Johan Santana. That's 7 years at $150 million. We shall find out. There have been many busts in free agency signing, and the Yankees can point to many of those. So can the Mets. But anyhow. So now, if somebody were to go over to Santana in about a month from now, when he's supposed to be reporting to St. Lucie in Florida, pitchers and catchers are supposed to report. If somebody were to break his left arm, Dennis will fight with him, and break his left arm, okay? Now, what we'll mean is, hold on, 1 second. That's correct. If he should never be able to recover, you break it in such a fashion that you can never recover. Huh? So you cost this person $150 million. That's the duration of his contract. However, that doesn't mean he doesn't have to be unemployed, right? He can work as an elevator man. Because to push the elevator, you can push at the button with your right hand. So he can make $22,000 working as an elevator. But for the first 2-3 days that his hand is being set in the hospital, he can't even work as an elevator boy. So the first thing that you do is you evaluate the damages. Damages are determined by how much he could have been worth, could have made prior to his injury, and how much he will now make based on what working as an elevator man. So it's $150 million minus $22,000. That's the nezek. Then he couldn't work for a week at all because he was laid up in the hospital. Couldn't even work as an elevator man. So now you will prorate $22,000 by 52 weeks, and you will now arrive at how much income he lost due to the fact that he was totally unemployed, could not even work as an elevator man. So you pay that. Plus, he probably will have gone to the hospital for special surgery, because this is a terrible break, and that all of the expenses that he has to lay out, the doctor bills, now have to be covered by you as well. So those are the first three obligations of the five. That's nezek, sheves, and ripui. Damage, you see what capacity he had to earn, what he cannot earn now as a result of the damage. The difference that he could have earned in a lower paying job, but in the interim cannot work at all. And then you pay for all of his medical expenses. At least these three psukim, five psukim, are within five psukim of one another. Okay, the Torah, you know, separates them a little, but at least in the same ballpark. The last two are divided up by several chumashim. Sa'ar is mentioned, and Boshet are both mentioned in our parsha, in Parshat Ki Teseh. So if you go to, for one second, to something that we learned a couple of months ago, where the Torah says, I'll give you the exact pasuk, Pasuk Perik Chof Bet, Pasuk Chavtet, Chavchet and Chavtet. Chavchet and Chavtet. Torah writes, Ki imtza ish na'ara bitula asher lo orasa. If you shall grab a woman who is a bitula, a virgin, who is not engaged, and you seize her and sleep with her, in other words, you raped her, v'nimtza, and you shall be discovered. Now, had she been a married woman, there's an open discussion. You don't pay a nickel. Why don't you pay a nickel? Because you're going to be executed. Because you slept with a woman who was married. So it's Eishes Ish, violation of Eishes Ish. But here, the woman is a single woman. A single woman, there is no death penalty associated with raping a single woman. V'natan ha'ish ha'shochid imala avianara chamishim kesef. You have to pay the father. It depends how old she is. If she's only a na'ara, she's an adult, she gets it herself. You pay her 50 silver pieces. V'lo tihye le'isha. And if she desires, and we explained this at the time, if she desires, she remains married to him throughout her entire life. She has the option to remain married to him. Why does he have to pay 50 silver pieces? Tachat asher ina. Maze tachat ish asher ina, because he made her suffer. The assumption is that rape is painful. Assumption is correct. It's painful. So you pay for tsa'ar. You pay for tsa'ar. This is the source that the fourth of the Hamishad Dvarim is that you pay for pain. The only difference is, despite the fact that this is the source, the way we evaluate pain is not based on the stipulation here. Here there is a fixed amount. Fixed amount. 50 silver pieces. That's not the way we compensate for pain. It's a very difficult way to gain. How much was the pain worth? How do you evaluate compensation for pain? Says the Gemara. You go around and do, survey says, how much a person would be willing to pay not to have experienced that pain. How much would you have experienced? Okay? Has anybody here suffered a painful injury? Anybody here suffered? Know what I'm talking about? Anybody here suffered a painful injury? Okay? Let's talk something turkey. Let's assume, forget about, okay, if you could have a baby, right, without experiencing the pain, and you don't have the net result, the joy and delight and ecstasy of having your baby 5 minutes after that pain. But you know the pain that you suffered. Could you imagine attaching a price, how much you would be willing to pay not to have to what? I imagine you couldn't come up with a dollar figure, right? If it was possible to have natural childbirth, natural, not a C-section, natural childbirth, but with not 1 ounce of pain. How much would people be willing to pay for that? That could be figured in a dollar amount. So here too, we go around surveying people who have experienced a similar injury. Obviously, you can't compare the pain of a childbirth to somebody who had a broken arm, right? So you will get people who have suffered a broken arm and see how much they would have paid in order not to what experience. I don't know if they would say, I'd pay $1 million. That was, you know, I don't know if they would say that. So whatever the amount is, whatever that assessment is, you now pay for pain. That's the fourth of the Chamisha Dvarim. Yes.
Shouldn't there be a realistic assessment? Like
yeah, of course.
It's something that you could afford to pay. So I could say, you know, for not breaking my arm, $1 billion, but obviously...
Okay, so that's why we take an assessment of what most people will do. Most people can't afford $1 billion. You get an average, exactly. Beis Din does of what's called a hashara.
So it can't be one of these like great.
Correct. We're not asking Donald Trump how much you would be willing to pay. Right. This is not a jury payment. Right. That's correct. You take the plane, push it to Balabas on the street.
Why don't they do it a little bit differently and ask the person? How much does someone have to pay you so that to experience this pain? Because that has no bearing on how much, you know.
Okay.
Because the other question is, how much money do I have? You know, that's...
Because that's... I know. Because
how much would I have to pay you?
Because you don't know. Because you can't really determine that accurately because you haven't had it yet.
Well, let's say you've had a broken arm. How much do I have to pay you to break your arm again?
Okay. So that's the way to do it. Okay. That's in effect, that's what you're saying.
Well,
you know, that's in effect, that's what you're saying. But you have to have experienced it to know the degree of pain. In our pasuk, we are now focusing on the element of shame. Shame. What this woman did was she did not injure this other man, but she just embarrassed him by, exposing or grabbing an area which is very shameful for a man. How do you evaluate such payment? The same way. How much a person who experienced shame would be willing to pay not to be embarrassed? How much would a person who has experienced a similar episode, how much would that person be willing to pay in order to avoid that situation? That, you know, is the damage associated with this particular shame. Yes.
Is it shame? I mean, is shame, or is it also a penalty for her because she did something
so highly inappropriate? Absolutely not. It's just
the shame. Absolutely not. She had pushed him and you fell down, and that's embarrassing because the woman pushed you down.
That would be shameful as well. Correct. The Gemara, the Torah is just exaggerating the case, because that certainly leads to shame on the male part. But if she was pushed down, he is, you know, Hulk Hogan. And a woman came over and just pushed him aside, that would be awfully embarrassing as well. Correct. Who said that? Hold on a second. No one ever said what the circumstances are, what's happening in this case. Is the husband being threatened? And you think, we're going to talk about that in a minute. I will see what the specifics are. Hold on a second. Yeah. Now, right. There is another essential rule concerning shame, that there are two factors that have to be determined in assessing how much the payment is. It also depends who the embarrasser is. The rule in the Mishnah, Rashi quotes it, it's a Mishnah Bava Kama, Hakol lefi hamivayesh vehamitbayesh. Hakol lefi hamivayesh vehamitbayesh. And of course there's a machlokes how to interpret it. Listen carefully. Who would you think would be the cause of greater shame? To be embarrassed by the President of the United States? Or to be embarrassed by a ordinary citizen walking around in the street? Which is the cause of greater shame? When you're embarrassed by somebody who is very low on the totem pole, this person had the gall to embarrass me, the Gulen Hadar? That's really shameful. Or is it greater shame when who embarrasses you? When who embarrasses you? The President of the United States. Who?
Which person?
And vice versa. When is there a greater element of shame? And here it's probably pretty obvious that if it's the President of the United States who are you publicly are humiliating, under those circumstances, one would imagine there is a greater element of shame than if you screamed at somebody in the street. You don't know him, nobody knows him, and it's not going to generate much headlines that you were publicly ridiculed in the street. So, at least for the mivayesh point and the mitbayesh, there is a debate which one, in effect, generates the greater shame. Is the greater shame generated when you are insulted by a punk? Or is the greater shame generated when you are insulted by the President of the United States? But whatever it is, you have to take that into consideration when making the assessment. The assessment is not uniform. It takes into consideration who the person who did the shaming, right? And the person was who was shamed. Who was shamed? Makes a very big difference in analyzing and evaluating what shame is. A President of the United States might be willing to pay a lot more not to be shamed than an ordinary citizen. You know, how much is big deal? Somebody screamed at me. President of the United States is going to pay a lot not to have to go through that type of humiliation. Yes?
A lot of the compensatory damages you're talking about sound like civil damages,
right.
Are there any concepts also that if you are a public figure, you put yourself out there more, so you're less liable? Or
is that not I don't know. That might be a factor to be considered here as well. It might be. If that's the norm in society, and it's to be expected for them, then the shame is a little less. That's correct. It might be. Always. That's a factor as well. 100%. Being shamed in your living room is not the same as being shamed in front of everybody else.
Who makes the determination?
The Bezdin. Bezdin makes that determination. That's correct. Right?
So isn't there a saying, I don't know, to embarrass a person is like killing you?
Correct. There is. But that has nothing to do with the fact that you also have to pay for damages if you injure somebody, if you shame somebody. That's the something. That malgun pnei chaveroi barabin, you shame somebody in public as if you murdered him. But that's an ethical statement, a moral statement, that has nothing to do with compensatory damages. Damages per se. Yeah? Good. So now let's take a look at... Now let's look at the psukim themselves. One question that we have asked almost continuously in Parshat Ki Teitzeh is what might be the flow of the psukim? Why is this particular pasuk recorded right after the one that we've seen this continuously? So here Parshanim seem to be in some agreement that the connection to this particular parsha is the introduction to the mitzvah of Yibum. Look at the introduction to the parsha of Yibum in Pasuk Hei. The introduction, first four words. Now, that phrase, Achim Yachdav, had halakhic significance, if you remember correctly. It meant that the two brothers have to what? Be alive at the same time. But a brother was conceived after the demise of the deceased brother, there's no mitzvah of Yibum. That's the halakhic interpretation. But there is also a simple achim yachdav. Brothers are sitting in peace and in harmony with one another. In contradistinction, what do you have? Two people are quarreling with one another. So some claim that the reason why this is listed here is based on the fact that in the previous parsha, we spoke about two people living in harmony with one another. Here is a situation where two people are quarreling with one another. Yes.
Can it also just be a contrast from the where we left off, where the woman goes and gets in the shoe and publicly embarrasses?
Excellent. That's a second suggestion. Precisely. Precisely. That is a second suggestion. We had just concluded the mitzvah of Yibum and Chalitza with the mitzvah of Chalitza, which describes the public humiliation of the husband or the brother-in-law, because he refuses, so shall be done to a person who does not want to rebuild his brother's household, and he is humiliated by the public spitting and so on and so forth. So once the Torah reminded itself of the boshes, which is demanded and expected, now the Torah tells you that not in the context of the mitzvah of Yibum and Chalitza, you have no right to what? To engage in embarrassing anybody. You know, in embarrassing anybody?
But that was stronger than Ayin Tachzayin, because in Ayin Tachzayin you don't have that last piece of Sachdosei
that right. But this is...
In other words, if you pay compensatory damages, if you have the five things that you mentioned...
Well, this is one of them, Boshes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is the fifth.
But you don't have Lo Sachdosei Necha. That seems to make it stronger.
No, but the Lo Sachdosei Necha is going to go and color all our obligations to any aspect of Kabbalah. When a person engages in hurting another human being, Lo Sachdosei Necha. And I'm going to explain what this means in a minute. I'm going to explain what it means in a minute. Let's take a look at Rashi. Let's take a look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Ki yir pasuk yud aleph, Ki yinatsu anashim yachdav ish ve'achiv. Initially, yinatsu does not denote striking anybody. It means arguing, having a debate, not just an argument. Now, just because you're arguing at each other and even screaming at each other doesn't mean that what? You should strike them. Says Rashi, it's the inevitable consequence. When people quarrel and struggle, one guy gets hot under the collar, sofo lavoli de makot. The next thing is that what's going to happen? He's going to strike at it. Shene emar, because the next pasuk continues, v'karva eshet ha'achad lahatzil et isha miyad makehu. In the beginning of the pasuk, it didn't say anybody strikes anyone. So how do I know that that the husband's even in danger? Well, what's the wife mixing in here for? Why is she embarrassing somebody because two people are having an argument? And Rashi says, the assumption is that the argument led to something a little worse than that. What did it lead to? Striking one another. When it led to striking one another, what happens then is that what? That this is going to lead to one another. And as a result, you're now going to be faced with the situation of damages. Ein shalom yotze mitoch yidei mitzut. There can't be any peace when you have what? Quarreling. That's not going to lead to a peaceful resolution of anything. Pasuk yudbet. Vikatzota et kapa. The literal translation, of course, is you cut off her hand. Says Rashi, don't be tempted to think that. It means mamon. It means mamon. And that's which everybody has. There happens to be one opinion in the Mishnah, in the name of Rebbe, who says that it means kemashmo. Ayin tachat ayin means you gouge out the guy's eye. Nobody accepts his opinion. Nobody accepts that opinion. Everybody else accepts that ayin tachas ayin, yad tachas yad, here everything is financial compensation. So the Ramban in Shmot already raises the question, why did HaKadosh Baruch have to be a Frank artist?
Yes.
Why didn't he just write keses tachat ayin, mamon tachat regel? Why did he have to say regel tachas regel, ayin tachas ayin, to then generate the impression that I need the Torah Shiva Al-Teh to tell me to correct the misinformation that might be committed. Why doesn't the Torah just say it right out?
It's true everywhere in this world, but we have to sit and interpret everything.
No, but here, the Torah... Right. It could lead... See, when the Torah just writes vague statements to eat matzah and doesn't define what matzah is, I know that that's what the world Torah about pays. But here, it's so easy. One simple word doesn't require any explanation. Yes?
Maybe it's because the victim will never really be made whole. That, I mean, really, the only thing that would make this person whole is if the other person suffered the same injury that he inflicted.
That's not going to make him whole.
No, but meaning that...
The second half of your statement has merit. So skip the first half of making anybody whole.
Not making whole, but this, I mean, yeah. Money is
truth
justice. Truth, justice, yeah.
You can never really evaluate
the value,
the pain, and the damage. Exactly. The problem is, it's impossible to replicate it. If you were to break someone's arm, that person could be strong and able to survive and withstand, you know, the enormous pain of breaking an arm. If we're going to break your arm in return, the damage, the retribution will have been in excess of what you caused. Why? Because you can't tolerate as much pain. So for you, it's a much greater act of suffering. So the Ramban says, in theory, it should be yad tachas yed, ayin tachas ayin. But since it's impossible to what? It's impossible to what? To recreate it, we don't do it.
And also you don't want the inhumane aspect.
But here is what I mean. Here's what I want to add upon that. It also wants to let you know that in theory, you should have your arm broken. And I illustrated this a couple of weeks ago. Somebody who's wealthy can stack up plenty of money.
Right.
You know what? I'm going to break your arm. Right away, I'll take out my checkbook. How much does it cost? How much is the doctor bills? Everything? I'll pay for it right now. I just love watching you suffer. That's fine with me. The Torah wants to communicate that you're really getting off the hook. And that in reality, what should have been happening to you, your arm should be broken. You wouldn't be so quick to engage in that calculation. If it wasn't just taking out your checkbook and saying, you know what, here's the check, you'd be much more reticent to engage in this type of behavior if you knew the consequences. Therefore, says the Ramban, the Torah does not write it. How does the Torah write it? Vikatsota et kapa. Knock off her hand. That's what should happen to her, perhaps. Yes. That's a very good question. I don't have a good answer for that. I don't have a good answer. Why is there a fixed amount for the rape of an unmarried girl? I don't know.
I don't understand why her hand is the value of a marriage.
How did they come up with that equation?
No, it's not. No, what did she do? Correct. So
the value of the embarrassment.
It's not the hand, which is the value. We're using the symbolic imagery to say she used her hand to cause his embarrassment. So now what should happen is, okay, use your hand, so we're going to cut off your hand. But we don't. So many parshanim explain the imagery even further. Take, for example, the Netziv. Said, what part of your body is used most frequently to earn money? Your hands. So the hand that is what? That has generated this money, that very same hand, what does that person have to do? What does the person have to do? It's got to part with the money. Part with that money. So it's as if you're chopping off your own hand. How? Because that hand had the ability to generate money. Now that very same hand is what? Giving out, doling out the money. That's what the Netziv suggests. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
If it is in fact making the woman pay a fine, it's in essence making the man pay the
money. No, there's no marrying in this case.
The husband is going to end up paying the fine.
The wife comes out to help the husband. Right.
Correct.
Right.
He's not getting the money. So the client, he's going to pay the client. Right?
Correct. Okay, so he's because he failed to educate his wife as to what's appropriate. Now, hold on a second. Let me give you the case here. Let me give you the case. I certainly did. Let's tell me the case. The Orach Chaim points out, let's examine the circumstances of what's happening. If the husband could not have been spared future beating, an additional blow, without the woman embarrassing the wife, without the woman embarrassing this other guy, then she's putter.
She's what?
She's putter. Benson will make that assessment. If she comes to a situation, two guys are fighting with one another, and she sees that her husband is about to receive a blow, if she can somehow stop the guy from doing it without embarrassing him, fine, that's the way to go. But if the only, and that's the case which our pasuk is talking about.
How does she know? She only has one shot.
Okay. She has to make, that's why usually they're going to rule in her favor in this case. But if it's perfectly, abundantly evident, I'll give you a simple, plain push of the case. Okay? And there's a fight over here, 5 feet away, there's a cop sitting in the car. He doesn't see what's going on. You can walk over to the police officer and say, look, there's two people, my husband's being attacked by this person. So you had a way to go over and terminate this fight without humiliating, without embarrassing him. Under those circumstances, you pay for the humiliation that you caused. But if it was in the assessment of Beit Din, there was no option, and it doesn't mean your husband was going to die. Because if your husband was going to die, what are you allowed to, what do you have to do? You have to kill him, not just embarrass him. What's that halacha known as? The rodeif. Of course. When you see somebody pursuing another life, your obligation is to terminate the murderer's life. No doubt about it. No questions asked. So the situation here is clear, that it doesn't look like anybody's murdering anybody. Not murdering anybody. He's hitting him, punching him a little, but he's not going to murder him. The weapon's visible, nothing. So now you have to make a determination. If in order to protect the hubby from subsequent blows, it could not have been done unless you resort to this act which generated humiliation, you are putter. Because you have a right to defend your husband, and any human being for that matter, from receiving an additional blow. That is your right which the Torah guarantees you. But if the avoidance of the blow could have been accomplished without the humiliation, then we are determined that the humiliation was unnecessary, and now you're going to pay for it. I grant you that most of the time it's a split-second decision, and you don't have time to sit and make chakiris. Let me see. Husband's getting pulped, beaten to a pulp. Can I do this? Yes.
Could there be also a warning to women that they can try to gain an advantage by in fighting off a man to grasp in an embarrassing place?
No, I don't.
Does she intentionally do this?
Yeah, it's obvious. Yes, good. That's my next point. I'll get to it. I'll take care of it right now. The emphasis is on, in the end of the pasuk, in pasuk Yud Aleph, Vishalcha Yada. She extends her hand. Says the Gemara, listen carefully, that you pay for busha only ad sheyit kavein. You have to intend to do it. And this is the difference between the other payments of human damage. The Mishnah says in Bava Kamma, Adam mu'ad le'olam. A person is always held responsible for damage which he or she inflicts. Always. There are no extenuating circumstances. For example, says the Mishnah, okay? You're invited to somebody's house. You go there for Shabbos. You go to sleep, no problem. In the middle, and there's a night table right there with a lamp. In the middle of the night, while you were asleep, your hand just flung out, knocked the lamp out, and shattered it to pieces. Did you do it deliberately? No. Are you obligated to pay full value? Yes. Full value. Why? Because for damage inflicted by a human being, we don't care why it took place. We don't care if you did it deliberately, accidentally. We don't care. You were shoved. It doesn't bother me. You pay for the damage. Penalties, this is something beyond the actual damage itself, requires ad shehit kaveh. You have to intend to humiliate somebody. But if you didn't intend to humiliate somebody, you were doing something else and it causes humiliation, whatever case you want to concoct, you don't pay that. You don't pay for bullshit at all. Because the Torah writes, v'shalcha yada. I am not sure why the Torah had to create this case only with a woman. Why did the Torah have to do this? Two men are what? Are fighting. The wife happens to walk by. Why don't you just give a regular case? I know it's more embarrassing. That's correct. I know it is. It is more embarrassing. But the Torah could have just given a regular case as well that two people were fighting and I went ahead and embarrassed them, you know, and trying to say it didn't have to be the guy's wife to introduce this.
But how did they determine? So it would be the same halacha as the brother?
What's in the two witnesses will make that assessment.
But how could she ask?
You can tell whether somebody lunges at somebody at a particular area of the person's body or not. You can tell that.
What if his daughter
joins?
Yes.
Yeah.
His daughter?
Makes no difference. Anybody. Yes.
Is there any penalty for failure
to intervene? That's an interesting question. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Now, the Good Samaritan law is not an obligation. It's not penalized. If somebody fails to be a good Samaritan, you just don't. There, we have, it's called lo ta'amod al dam re'acha. Don't stand by idly when somebody is in danger. You have a sacred obligation to do so.
But you have to intervene, but you have to be careful.
That is correct, how she does it. Correct.
Al dam re'acha, you said that there's no situation
here of death. It doesn't, but it doesn't only mean death. Always, 100%. There's only one state in the Union that has such a law. State of Oregon. If you can help somebody and you don't, you are subject to fine and perhaps even imprisonment. If you have an opportunity to save somebody with a package and you refuse to do so, you can be held accountable. It's Am Yisrael and the state of Oregon. No one else. Yes.
You had brought the parallel to Ki Yeshvu Achim Yatsa to Ki Yatsa Rashi.
Right. Right, they're not acting as Achim.
Because I was thinking maybe there was a connection to the Obama case and to the Yibam, because she, if let's say her husband had been killed, he might have had the obligation to support her, the one who survived, who had been embarrassed. If they were brothers.
If he was killed?
If they were actual brothers.
And what happened to the brother? He was killed?
If her husband was killed. That one brother had been killed. The second brother, in theory, could have been in a position where he might have.
Yes.
I think maybe Rachel gets that question, but if it's not the wife, another woman, the mother, the daughter.
Makes no difference. No one's allowed to. No one's allowed to cause shame.
So the same thing applies. In other words, it's not. I mean, you said you were comparing woman to man, but among women, it doesn't matter what.
Makes no difference whether it's a daughter or an uncle, an aunt, and it makes no difference. Who cares? The point is, if you can avoid the situation without the shame, under those circumstances, make an effort to do so.
Amanda?
Yes.
There's a difference in between a betula and not.
That is correct.
Is that at all similar to the amount?
No. That's an arbitrary difference of 100 silver pieces. A betula, tshuva, is worth 200 silver pieces. Somebody who has had either widowed or divorced, that person has a ketubah of 100 silver pieces.
So I was trying to do a connection.
No, no, no. Yes?
Can be verbal
too? Sure. Sure. All right. Now, it's interesting how Rashi is going to prove from this pasuk that shame in this case does not mean cutting off the hand, but what should you do? You pay for it. Very interesting how Rashi is going to prove it. Take a look at the next pasuk, at the next Rashi. In the middle of the Rashi, Rashi says, "Bimei boshto, how much do you pay for shame?" I'm in pasuk yudbet. Hakol lefi hamivayesh v'hamitvayesh. All of it depends on what, who the shamer is and who the shamee is. Asks Rashi, "Oenu eli adam mamash." Maybe this pasuk really means what you're supposed to do: cut off her hand. She used her hand. Cut off her hand. Look how Rashi proves it. Ne'emar kan lo takos. The pasuk Yud Bet, which we read, concludes, don't have compassion. Lo takos einecha. V'ne'emar lahalan be'edim zomimin lo takos. By edim zomimin it also says lo takos. Ma lahalan mamon, afkan mamon. Just as Adam Zomamin is money, so too this is only money. It's very strange Rashi. I'll tell you why. Adam Zomamin, it depends on what the case is. Correct. Depends what the case is. If the two witnesses testified about a capital punishment case, what do? You put them to death. If they testified about a loan case, two witnesses said, I witnessed a loan that you borrowed, the shadow, you borrowed $1,000 from Ricky. Okay, very nice. So, now, the witnesses were Adam Zomerman. So the witness has to pay you $1,000. So how does Rashi prove, by virtue of the fact that it says lo tachos by Adam Zomerman, how does he prove that that means money in this case, when in some of the cases by Adam Zom it doesn't mean money at all? In fact, what does the pasuk lo tachos by Adam Zomerman mean? What does the pasuk mean? Don't have any... What is the word lo tachos? Don't have compassion. Why might I be tempted to have compassion on the Adam Zomerman? Because after they didn't kill anybody. They attempted to kill. Why shouldn't I have compassion on Adam Zomerman when they testified that Shari owes $1,000? Because she didn't pay the money yet. And if she did, she's getting it right back. So there was no loss. So I could be tempted to say, just give him a little patch of an hand. And that's it, and say, don't do this again. Says the Torah, lo tochos. Don't have any mercy. If they're supposed to be killed, what do? You execute them. If they're supposed to get lashes, what do? You give them lashes. If the case was a case of lashes, two witnesses testified that you ate pork. So what did they want to do to you? They wanted to give you lashes. Then what happens? They became Adam Zomerman. What happens to them? They get lashes. So how does Rashi prove from that phrase that that means only mamon? It does mean mamon in a certain way, and that this should apply on Masa Hussein means mamon? I don't know. I don't know how Rashi accomplishes that through his statement in this particular, and it's not Rashi's fault. Rashi's quoting a Midrash Halakha Sifri. I would much rather have simply said that there is no textual evidence whatsoever that it means money. Just like there is no textual evidence that an eye for an eye means what? Money. An eye for an eye means literally. But what do we rely on? Torah, Shiva Alta.
the oral tradition. Moshe Rabbeinu came down and said, according to most authorities, Moshe Rabbeinu came down, when he taught this pasuk, he said, it means mama. Rather than trying to force it into vikatsota et kapa, which doesn't seem to be a compelling statement by Adam Zoma that you have to pay money. So how can this be the source for this, that this is the compelling statement? Yeah. All right. We'll stop here, Rabotai, and we'll continue next to Bach.